Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Empowering and inspiring, Supergirl Summer Camp hosts First Responder Law Enforcement Day by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Midland Sheriff's Department, Ector County Sheriff's Department, and the Texas Department of Public Safety, Midland Fire Department, Midland Police Department, Midland Police Crime Scene Investigation Team, and U.S. Border Patrol all showed up in full force Thursday morning at the Midland County Horseshoe Pavilion. The effort was a planned response to the second annual Supergirl Summer Camp First Responder Law Enforcement Day. The camp is the brainchild of Jennifer Jordan Strain, a.k.a. Bench Press Betty. For Jordan Strain, the dream of creating a summer camp that would empower and inspire young girls to want to dream big as it's in its second year of fruition. We have key female speakers each day that come in and share their stories to the girls of how they came to love their profession, Jordan Strain wrote on the camp's website. According to Jordan Strain, the speakers also share valuable skills with the girls that include topics such as teamwork, problem solving, confidence building, leadership, and people skills. The daytime summer camp hosts about 50 female campers between the ages of 7 and 13. Specifically, the girls met one-on-one with different law enforcement agencies to ask questions, try on equipment, and learn the responsibilities and job functions of first responders and Permian Basin law enforcement. Sergeant Stephen Blanco of the West Texas Region for the Department of Public Safety said the event was a great introduction for young ladies to have firsthand interactions with law enforcement and first responders. It's a great career opportunity that is underserved when it comes to young ladies, he said during an interview with the Reporter-Telegram. Law enforcement here is one big giant team, and we all came together to make this happen here today. Abigail Hightower, a team volunteer for the Supergirl Summer Camp, said the experience was inspirational, especially to see older girls interact with the agencies since they were getting ready for their careers. I think that it's been really neat to see everybody try to find what they want to do when they grow up, she said during an interview. Additionally, she said the camp provides a good environment for the girls as well. I think that it gives a safe place for all these girls to interact and meet new friends and just have fun because I think that's what summer is about, she said. For Jordan Strain, she said the camp took about 5 years to plan from concept to creation. It is just a week-long celebration of being a little girl. I bring in different female guest speakers each day to talk to the girls and share their stories, their professions, or passions, and offer any advice to the girls who want to follow in their footsteps, she said. Jordan Strain said that she didn't have any children of her own, but she hopes that the camp continues to grow and outlive her one day. Empowering and inspiring, Supergirl Summer Camp hosts First Responder Law Enforcement Day. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Midland Sheriff's Department, Ector County Sheriff's Department, and the Texas Department of Public Safety, Midland Fire Department, Midland Police Department, Midland Police Crime Scene Investigation Team, and U.S. Border Patrol all showed up in full force Thursday morning at the Midland County Horseshoe Pavilion. The effort was a planned response to the second annual Supergirl Summer Camp First Responder Law Enforcement Day. The camp is the brainchild of Jennifer Jordan Strain, a.k.a. Bench Press Betty. For Jordan Strain, the dream of creating a summer camp that would empower and inspire young girls to want to dream big as it's in its second year of fruition. We have key female speakers each day that come in and share their stories to the girls of how they came to love their profession, Jordan Strain wrote on the camp's website. According to Jordan Strain, the speakers also share valuable skills with the girls that include topics such as teamwork, problem solving, confidence building, leadership, and people skills. The daytime summer camp hosts about 50 female campers between the ages of 7 and 13. Specifically, the girls met one-on-one with different law enforcement agencies to ask questions, try on equipment, and learn the responsibilities and job functions of first responders and Permian Basin law enforcement. Sergeant Stephen Blanco of the West Texas Region for the Department of Public Safety said the event was a great introduction for young ladies to have firsthand interactions with law enforcement and first responders. It's a great career opportunity that is underserved when it comes to young ladies, he said during an interview with the Reporter Telegram. Law enforcement here is one big giant team, and we all came together to make this happen here today. Abigail Hightower, a team volunteer for the Supergirl summer camp, said the experience was inspirational, especially to see older girls interact with the agencies since they were getting ready for their careers. I think that it's been really neat to see everybody try to find what they want to do when they grow up, she said during an interview. Additionally, she said the camp provides a good environment for the girls as well. I think that it gives a safe place for all these girls to interact and meet new friends and just have fun because I think that's what summer is about, she said. For Jordan Strain, she said the camp took about 5 years to plan from concept to creation. It is just a week-long celebration of being a little girl. I bring in different female guest speakers each day to talk to the girls and share their stories, their professions, or passions, and offer any advice to the girls who want to follow in their footsteps, she said. Jordan Strain said that she didn't have any children of her own, but she hopes that the camp continues to grow and continue and outlive her one day. MOTRAN urges residents to comment on TxDOT's 2025 plan by Mela McEwen, oil editor. Residents from Midland, Odessa, and throughout the Permian Basin are being asked to comment on the Texas Department of Transportation's 2025 Unified Transportation Plan. The deadline for comments is August 5th. Earlier this month, TxDOT published its draft 2025 UTP for public comments. The plan calls for a record $104.2 billion in transportation spending over the next 10 years. This year, the only additions were projects either added through utilization of locally available program funding, as well as $61 million in additional funding for Interstate 20 and $164 million in additional funding for U.S. 285. Having area residents comment is real important, said James Beauchamp, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram by telephone, he said there are two factors at play. First is public support for additional funding for transportation projects in the Permian Basin. That's critical to this area, and when you look at what we do for the state, but more than that, just for transportation, it's critical, he said. In just the past 5 years, the Permian Basin has provided almost $11 billion in severance tax transfers to the State Highway Fund, with 70% of that amount coming from the 12-year County TxDOT Odessa District, Beauchamp said. So it's important TxDOT hear from residents about the impact of transportation needs. The second factor is prioritizing projects, he said. While there is almost chance the 2025 UTP will be significantly altered, he said the comments can help set the tone and identify priorities for the 2026 plan, which should get underway sometime this fall. While there have been millions poured into I-20 and expanding U.S. Highway 285 from Pecos to the Texas-New Mexico state line, Beauchamp said there are other pressing needs. For example, he said Loop 250 in Midland and Loop 338 in Odessa both need to be completed. We're one of the few metro areas without a finished loop. That would do a lot for traffic. Midland County to seal coat 84 miles of roads by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Midland County has made performing preventative maintenance on roads a priority. This week, county commissioners held a special meeting and approved a contract with Danny's Asphalt Paving to lay down a fog seal coat on 84 miles of road in Midland County. The contract is in the amount of $2.1 million. Fog seal coating will lengthen the life of the road by 4 or 5 years every time we do it, Jesse Ferguson, the county's capital projects manager, told the Reporter Telegram. We'll be doing work in every precinct in Midland County. Ferguson said the project will start in October and last about 60 days. The work starts in the fall because the seal coat, which is a liquid asphalt layer sprayed onto the road, reacts better in cooler temperatures. Plus, the material won't be sticky for nearly as long as it does when it's hot. While this year's work has been outsourced, Ferguson said the county is preparing to do the work itself in the coming years. When you're able to do it in-house, you get the most bang for your buck, he said, adding that the county has most of the equipment it needs already. Seal coating is part of a 10-year plan the county has for improving roads, and it's only one part. In May, the county began its Save Coat Chip Sealing Project, Ferguson said. Savecoat isn't an industry term. We call it that because the two layers of chip sealing we're putting down will save our roads. Potholes and chewed up road edges will be repaired in the process. By September, 52 miles of roads will have received the chip seal treatment. Midland County has 420 miles of publicly maintained road in total. Ferguson said that within the next 3 to 4 years, every road will have undergone preventative maintenance. Midland Crime Stoppers Facebook page hacked by BK Richter, staff writer. The Midland Crime Stoppers page was hacked. In a press release distributed Thursday, Midland Crime Stoppers said its official Facebook page was hacked on July 4th and was subsequently down for 1 week. This breach resulted in the loss of over 22,000 plus followers, which is deeply disappointing and devastating for us and our mission, said Executive Director Angie Valenzuela in an email to the Reporter Telegram. The hacking incident took down our Facebook page and disrupted our ability to communicate with our community. Valenzuela said. It also impeded our role as a vital tool for law enforcement in soliciting tips and engaging the public on criminal cases. However, there is good news on the horizon. As the nonprofit is back on Facebook, this time, the nonprofit said, they are committed to using this challenge as an opportunity to revamp their page for improved security and user experience. Additionally, the organization has launched an Instagram account to expand its outreach. Now all our social media platforms will use the unified handle of @6942 Tips for easier access, said Midland Crime Stoppers. How to stay connected. Facebook, new page at Facebook.com/694tips. Instagram, connect with us on Instagram @694tips. Submit anonymous tips, hotline 432-694-TIPS, 8477, or 1-800-7-LOCKUP, website www.694tips.com, mobile app P3 Tips, mobile app. Midland Crime Stoppers is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping law enforcement solve crimes and improve safety in the Midland area. Through anonymous tips and community collaboration, the organization strives to make the community safer for all. Midland to help test new menu. Cracker Barrel testing new menu items through August 5th by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Cracker Barrel has launched the largest menu revamp in its history, and Midlanders are helping test the company's new dishes. The Cracker Barrel at 3108 North Loop 250 West is one of the 14 Texas cities testing 20 new items, which are available on the menu through August 5th. Midland and the other Texas towns were chosen because Texas is an ideal testing ground, according to Cracker Barrel officials. They told the Reporter Telegram by email that the state's large, diverse population offers a broad spectrum of taste to consider. The restaurant chain also has a strong presence in the Lone Star State with customers who appreciate home-style cooking. This combination makes the Lone Star State a natural fit for this Texas-sized test, they wrote. New items range from breakfast, like cinnamon break French toast, to lunch and dinner, such as hash brown casserole, shepherd's pie, and slow-braised pot roast. Appetizers include green chili cornbread, and desserts include banana pudding. In addition, some traditional recipes, include chicken and dumplings, have been adjusted to reduce any complexities for employees. While the company is still gathering feedback from guests and employees, officials said they have seen success in early iterations of the test, so they plan to introduce several of these new items to all stores this fall. Those items include savory chicken and rice, pot roast, and hash brown casserole shepherd's pie. In addition to Midland, the other Texas cities testing the new dishes are Abilene, Allen, Amarillo, 2 in Arlington, Benbrook, Cypress, 2 in Houston, Kingswood, Lubbock, Weatherford, and Wichita Falls. Permian Basin Ninja Academy to host American Ninja Warrior Daniel Gill by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Daniel Gill, also known as the Kingdom Ninja, is bringing his ninja skills to the Permian Basin Academy on Saturday. Kendra Nurkanen, the co-owner and head coach of the Ninja Training Facility, invited the Season 12 winner of American Ninja Warrior to host workshops and a meet and greet at the gym. Nurkanen started training in the sport in 2018 and opened the training facility in Midland 6 months ago. Ninja training involves obstacle courses that test endurance, agility, strength, and flexibility through challenges. Nurkanen said she became interested in ninja training because she watched the show and wanted to set up a goal for herself. Through her training, she realized that the show was not only the place she could compete in, there were several competition leagues. Nurkanen and her students currently compete in around 4 leagues: the Ultimate Ninja Athlete Association, the World Ninja League, the Texas Ninja League, and the Federation of International Ninja Athletics. She also recognized the need for a ninja training gym because the closest one prior to the Permian Basin Ninja Academy was around 5 to 6 hours away. During COVID, I knew I wanted to build a ninja gym, but I had no idea where to start, said Nurkanen. When I opened it, I was like, I want to bring in as many ninjas as I can. Nurkanen said that she knew she wanted to bring in ninjas so that people can learn about the sport. I can get ninjas in the door and have everyone come meet them, Nurkanen said. They can see what the ninja community is all about. Nurkanen said that the ninja community is very supportive. Everyone is there to cheer on each other, Nurkanen said. Nobody is hoping that you lose. The women in my division are always on my sidelines cheering me on and telling me how to do obstacles. The ninja training community is tight-knit, and Nurkanen met Gil at a competition. I knew immediately that he was one of the ninjas that I wanted to come in and train the kids, Nurkanen said. During the gym's grand opening, Nurkanen invited 3 ninjas to come in, do a meet and greet, and train people. Her vision for the team included bringing people in and showing the local community what ninja training looks like. She said she's excited for Gil to come to Midland. Apart from his athleticism, Gil is known for motivational speaking and for his strong faith. His nickname, the Kingdom Ninja, came from the way he praised God each time he won. I just love his outlook on life, Nurkanen said. I love that he's not afraid to be himself. He sticks to his morals and is an all-around amazing person. To sign up for the meet and greet or a workshop with Gil, you can book online or through the Permian Basin Ninja Academy's app. The meet and greet with Gil costs $15. There will be 2 sessions, one beginning at 2 p.m. and the other at 4 p.m. The advanced competitive workshop begins at noon and costs $50. There will be 2 introductory level workshop sessions, one at 3 p.m. and the other at 5 p.m. The Permian Basin Ninja Academy is located at 3303 West Illinois Avenue.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and this is the Odessa American for Saturday, July 6, 2024, through Monday, July 8, 2024. Local Jiu-Jitsu Gym Having Big Success by James Keith. Managing a martial arts-based gym can often be a challenging endeavor, requiring both high-level instruction and black belt-level business sense. Odessans Josh Olive and Ruben Hernandez have found success building a community-based Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym, helping students to participate in competitions across the country while leading classes in what they consider to be a world-class facility. Partnering together in 2019, Olive and Hernandez purchased Vagabond Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu from former owner Clay Hantz with hopes of creating a gym that could enrich others' lives and build a strong community. Olive, who was a member of Vagabond before purchasing the business, said the opportunity was a perfect storm and soon after set a goal of relocating and building a new facility. It took us a couple of years between purchasing the land and getting it built, and obviously we couldn't do it without the community we have that pays their dues and memberships, Olive said. That's how we were able to do this and establish a world-class facility in West Texas. Olive said, since taking over Vagabond, the number of members has grown from around 100 to almost 400. Olive said managing the business and profit side of Vagabond is the same as any other small business. We treat Vagabond just as seriously as any other business. It's not a hobby for Ruben and I. This is our living, and so we treat it as such, Olive said. It's really no different compared to any other business. Inside the facility, training and instruction are led by Ruben Hernandez, who started practicing jiu-jitsu in 2007. Hernandez says he enjoys the localized feel of the gym and thrives to accommodate everyone's goals. We rely on the community. We have to make each other better because we don't have other opportunities like other big places, Hernandez said. We have to build the people here, and we have to take care of the people here. Hernandez said it is important to try and make training goal-oriented over anything else, and that jiu-jitsu is not about the journey or destination, but who someone becomes on their journey. This practice has shown results, as Vagabond has garnered two International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation Master World Champions, four American National Champions, and two Master International Champions. While Vagabond has found success on a business and instruction front, on an instructor-to-student level, Hernandez said he tries to help students prepare and brace for inevitable failures. Whether someone meets their goal or not, it's not as important as that, Hernandez said. As long as you had a goal, you're better off, and that's how we try to handle losses. There's days when you're going to feel worse or better, but as long as you're setting a goal and working towards it, you are making progress. Event will raise funds for Odessa Swim School by Nathaniel Miller. The water has always been good to Brian Schroeder. As a child, he grew up near a neighborhood pool and started competitive swimming at 5 years old. He would become a lifeguard and teach the occasional swim lesson as a teenager. When it was time to go to college, Schroeder took a chance and left his hometown of Sugar Land to join the men's swim team at the University of Texas of the Permian Basin, where he would meet his future wife, Kelly, who was then a member of the women's swim team. Now, Schroeder is looking to share his love of swimming by opening a swimming center in Odessa. This is something I feel like I was called to step up and be the person to get it going, Schroeder said. The proposed Permian Basin Swim School has a goal of opening in 2025 with a proposed location on Billy Hext Road. Having worked on the project for more than a year, Schroeder is planning a fundraiser to raise the money. Scheduled for August 23rd at Milson's Legends Honky Tonk Saloon, 6900 Sleepy Hollow Street, the event will include dinner, an open bar, live music, and a silent auction. Tickets for sponsorship levels at $5,000, $3,000, and $1,500 are still available and include advertising options and swim lessons. Schroeder said individual tickets sold in pairs could also become available. He said the response from friends and community members has been overwhelming. The way they've given me advice and putting their hard-earned dollars behind something I'm starting makes me want to do the best I can, Schroeder said. The Thrill of Victory, Agony of Defeat by Michael Bauer. For many people, sports can be more than an activity. It's almost a religion. That can be evident from the many different athlete expressions in the Ellen Noel Art Museum's current exhibition, The Perfect Shot, Walter Use Jr. and the Art of Sports Photography. The exhibition, which illustrates the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, is currently on display at the Ellen Noel Art Museum's temporary location at the Presidential Archives until August 11th. Museum hours are 12 to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday and 12 to 8 p.m. Thursdays. The museum is closed on Mondays and holidays. Over his extensive career, photographer Walter Use Jr. has worked with some of the greatest athletes of the past 60 years, capturing the moments of triumph and defeat that athletes and non-athletes know well. The exhibition is organized into five sections of universal emotions: anticipation, perseverance, triumph, disappointment, and reflection. These sections allow visitors to find the common threads that transcend athletic genres and athletes. This exhibit takes you through five different emotions, typically related to both humanity and in sports, Ellen Noel, Associate Curator and Registrar Colton Manchester said. Looking through those five emotions, Walter gives us an opportunity to feel the emotions that we had when we played sports, but also the universal human emotions. Born in 1943, Use cultivated his passion for photography from an early age. He shot his first roll of film at the age of 16 during a New York Giants game with his father. A few short years later, he landed his first cover for Sports Illustrated in 1963. Yus established himself a prolific photographer for the magazine and photographed the first 53 Super Bowls. His work has been featured on over 300 covers. The significance of this exhibit, Walter Yus Jr., has been the world of photography forever, Manchester said. Everyone loves him, and his photos have been on magazine covers since he was 17. Being able to bring this to Odessa is great, considering this community has a rich sports tradition, especially with football. It's amazing to share the beauty and the work of Walter Yus with the community. Some of his famous photos that are featured in the exhibit include baseball legend Sandy Koufax, Michael Jordan, and one that the Dallas Cowboy fans probably would like to forget, the famous The Catch photo of San Francisco 49ers receiver Dwight Clark in the NFC Championship game in January 1982 at Candlestick Park. Manchester said the exhibit has received a positive reception from guests. It's been great, Manchester said. We had an older couple that came to see this exhibit, and they were around to see some of these moments while they were happening. To see locals come in and connect with these moments in time is incredible. The exhibit is not just for those who are sports fanatics or those interested in sports photography. This isn't an exhibit purely about sports photography, Manchester said. Even if you don't feel passionate about certain sports or sports photography, you're going to find things to connect to in this exhibit. This is art in the way that it displays human emotions. It's something we can all relate to. Officer of the Year honored by recognition. Vanessa Flores has always worked hard and gone the extra mile, but she was still taken aback to be chosen Officer of the Year for Ector County ISD. Stationed at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, Flores's campuses also include Odessa Collegiate Academy and OC Techs. She just completed 6 years with the district. I felt very honored because with us, my colleagues, my partners, are the ones that vote you in. In the beginning, they send out a list of names, and they're the ones that vote you in, she added. I like to help out when I can, not expecting anything in return, but I felt very happy. Flores said she feels she's always been a hard worker. This is the first year she was assigned to a campus like NTO, which is pretty quiet. I've always been at busy schools, so I've always worked hard. I always go the extra mile, and this year I was also given the opportunity to become one of the internal affairs investigators. So I've been working on a lot of backgrounds for new hires. I just completed two this past week that I submitted on June 17th, Flores said. In internal affairs, she would also investigate a complaint against an officer. When she was told she would be placed at NTO, Flores said she was upset because the campus was so calm. She was used to writing 6 or 7 reports a day. But now, when she sometimes goes to the middle schools, she's glad to be on a smaller campus. She got to know her juniors and seniors and build relationships without them being in trouble. It was really different. Very smart kids, Flores said. The only issue she's had is with criminal trespass when students sneak in from other campuses. I love it because, like I said, it's so small that they know who belongs here and who doesn't, Flores said. A South Texas transplant, she worked for the Penitas Police Department in the Rio Grande Valley. Her husband, Leroy, came to Odessa to work in the oil field. He now works for ECISD Police Department as well. He came up here to work in the oil field, and then on my vacation break, I came up to visit him. During the day, I was bored while he was at work, so I went to the mall, and that's where I met Lieutenant Terry Upchurch and Lieutenant Chancey Westfall. I found it strange that it was such a small mall for it to have officers, because where we're from, it's a big mall, and there's no officers. So I approached them. I was like, "So what do you all do?" They explained to me, but then they told me they work worked for the school district. They explained that that was an off-duty gig, Flores said. She introduced herself and said she was an officer, too. They said ECISD was hiring officers, and they explained the hours and the days off, which sounded good to her. I went back home. I thought about it. I put in an application, and here I am. I ended up moving here, Flores said. She and Leroy have four children. They are first-generation law enforcement. They don't have family in the field. I have one daughter who is currently at Texas A&M. She wanted to be a doctor all her life. She graduated top three last year from Permian High School, so now she's going into forensics. She went over there because of forensics, Flores said. Flores has been in law enforcement for 13 years, but she wasn't always a police officer. With a bachelor's degree from University of Texas Pan America, she started off as a pre-kindergarten teacher and has taught kindergarten, first and second grade. She taught middle school as well, but didn't like that. She heard stories from the younger kids about abuse, and that's what pointed her toward law enforcement. I wanted to make sure that they got the consequences. I couldn't handle the little ones telling me this and took a major turn. I'm the only female with four older brothers. When I told my parents, they were like, "What? You're a girl." I went when I was in my 30s to the police academy. They're like, "You're a female. You're short. You're too nice. You're not going to make it," Flores recalled. But it was something she wanted to do. She made it, and one of the first cases she investigated was of a child being sexually assaulted. At first, they thought it was the mother's boyfriend, but it turned out it was the maternal grandfather. Her reports are very thorough and detailed because she wants to make sure the charges stick. So far, she's never been called to court. Since then, I've treated every case as an investigation, as if it were going to go to court. Even the simplest things, now I make sure I have all my information gathered, all my facts, to make sure it's going to stick. Even on information reports, my lieutenants have told me, "You write a lot." I'm like, "You never know." I like to go back just in case, because you never know if this information case is going to go somewhere, Flores said. As a side note, her office at NTO has sports bobbleheads, vehicles, ducks, and Selena memorabilia. ECISD Police Chief Jeff Daniels said Flores is very deserving of the award. Vanessa is an outstanding officer. Every campus she's worked, she's developed great relationships with the students and staff. She is a perfect example of an officer who strives to be the best in her position. She is a true asset to ECISD and the department, Daniels said. Letter to the editor. Odessa councilman apologizes for behavior. Mark Mata, Odessa City Council member for District 1, issued a press release Friday, accompanied by a recorded video statement, to publicly apologize and address his role in inappropriate behavior. Mata acknowledges and takes full responsibility for engaging in inappropriate conduct, specifically texting a female that is not his wife. The following is a full statement from Mark Mata. "I am here today to sincerely apologize and take full responsibility for inappropriate text messages I sent to a woman other than my wife. I apologize first and foremost to my wife, as I have let you down. I also apologize to my family, constituents, colleagues, and community for the hurt and disappointment I have caused. My actions were a serious lapse in judgment, and I take complete responsibility. I understand the impact this has had on those who trusted and supported me, and I humbly ask for your forgiveness. I apologize to the husband of the person I had these text exchanges with and ask for your forgiveness. As a Christian, I have also betrayed the morals and principles which I deeply believe in and have asked God to forgive me and to change my heart so this never happens again. I've spoken to my pastor about this lapse in judgment and have asked for prayer and guidance as I repent of my sin. To be clear, this inappropriate behavior ended over a year ago, but it is my obligation to share this with my constituents. I am ashamed of my behavior, and I have a lot of work to do in order to regain the trust of so many people in our community. I do not take this lightly, and I am fully aware that my actions were wrong and can never happen again. I love Odessa and our people, and am committed to doing everything in my power to demonstrate that my words today are not hollow, and I will work as hard as I possibly can to work for the residents of our amazing city. This has been an extremely difficult time for my family, and I ask that you lead my family out of this, as I am responsible for this. There is much healing to do, and I am committed to put in the work to help our family heal. Thank you for your understanding and consideration. Obituaries and death notices. Elmer Osceola Rutledge. Elmer Osceola Rutledge passed away peacefully on June 29, 2024, at the age of 82 in Odessa, Texas. He was born on March 27, 1942, in Knox City, Texas, to W.F. Bill Rutledge and Trasda Elena Roper. A memorial service will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel. George Wayne Freeman. George Wayne Freeman, 70, of Odessa, Texas, died Sunday, June 30, 2024, in Odessa, Texas. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. August 2, 2024, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Alma Louise Bean Schiffer. Alma Louise Bean Schiffer, 97, of Waxahachie, died Saturday, June 29, 2024, in Waxahachie. Chapel service was held at 10 a.m. July 8, 2024, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial followed at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Odessan facing aggravated assault charges. An Odessa man was arrested last Saturday afternoon after a woman told police he came after her and her mother with a stick while they were out for a walk. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a woman called 911 around 12:40 p.m. from the 42nd Street and Tom Green area and said a shirtless man wearing shorts and carrying a backpack had struck her with a stick. When officers arrived in the area, they found a man matching that description hitting a light pole with a yellow stick, the report stated. As soon as the man saw the officers, he dropped the stick and placed his hands in the air, but was hostile. According to the report, the agitated and sweaty man refused to give his name, but an officer found a work ID in his backpack, identifying him as Jeremiah Jazz Dawson. The alleged victim told officers she and her mom were walking north on Tom Green and noticed Dawson walking back and forth from one side of the curb to the other and striking light poles with a stick, the report stated. When the women got close to Dawson, the woman said he tried to hit her mom with the stick, but she got in between them and took a blow to her left arm, the report stated. After she told him no, the woman said Dawson hit her in the face with the stick. The woman said she and her mom walked away and called police. According to the report, the woman identified the stick Dawson dropped as the one he used to strike her. Dawson was booked into the Ector County Jail on two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in custody Tuesday night on surety bonds totaling $80,000. Permian Strategic Partnership encourages community participation to secure TxDOT funding. Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, invites members of the Texas Permian Basin community to join in securing financial support from the Texas Department of Transportation. The Texas Department of Transportation, TxDOT, has unveiled its draft 2025 Unified Transportation Program, or UTP, that charts the course for the next decade, with $3.9 billion in funding allocated for the Odessa District. The projects funded by the UTP will greatly benefit residential and commercial traffic, guaranteeing increased accessibility, improved travel experiences, and heightened road safety. As proud residents of the Permian, we have a crucial stake in securing this financial support. The Commission is accepting public comments until August 5th, and we ask that you join us in voicing support for this much-needed funding, a news release said. More information and a link to participate can be found at permianpartnership.org/2025UTP. Pets of the Week. Caden is a two-year-old tan male lab mix. Grayson is a one-year-old light tan male shepherd mix. They need to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Grayson or Caden, or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 2230 West Sycamore or call 432-257-4311. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $75. Donations are also welcome and will go toward kennels, cat house, and adoption center.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 11th. Fentanyl trafficker gets 20 years in prison. Midland man, age 39, peddled counterfeit M30 oxycodone pills that led to the deaths of two West Texas men. The story was written by B.K. Richter. A Midland man was sentenced to 20 years in prison for his role in fentanyl trafficking that turned fatal. According to federal court documents and a press statement from the U.S. Attorney's Office, William Jake Childers, age 39, trafficked counterfeit M30 oxycodone pills containing fentanyl that led to the deaths of two West Texas men. In May 2022, Winkler County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to an unattended death at a residence in Kermit. Autopsy results confirmed the cause of the male victim's death to be acute fentanyl toxicity. An investigation confirmed that the victim and Childers had communicated about the sale of fentanyl pills. In May 2023, Midland Police Department officers discovered an unconscious male victim at a residence who died after being transported to a Midland hospital. The death was also confirmed to be from fentanyl toxicity, and investigators again traced the fentanyl pills to Childers' drug trafficking. During October 2023, Childers was pulled over for a traffic stop by the Ranger Police Department. A search of his vehicle found 740 fentanyl-laced M30 pills, in addition to a loaded firearm. Quote, "This office has again prosecuted a case in which fentanyl traffickers valued quick profits over human lives," said U.S. Attorney Jaime Esparza for the Western District of Texas. Continuing the quote, "Sadly, fentanyl continues to plague our communities and claim the lives of our friends, neighbors, and loved ones," end quote. Co-defendant Jesse Cortez remains in custody awaiting sentencing. The DEA investigated the case. Assistant U.S. Attorneys Joe Mahoney and Amy Hale prosecuted the case. Deferral of vote sparks outcry. City Council had delayed decision on funding for school crossing guards. The story was written by B.K. Richter. This week, the Reporter Telegram published a story discussing the subject of school crossing guards during a meeting of the Midland City Council. During that meeting Tuesday, council members voted unanimously to defer the passage of a contract to pay all city management services for the management of school crossing guards. The cost to provide the school crossing guards is estimated to be $839,000 per year, all of it to be paid by the City of Midland. People have reacted to the story on social media. Dozens of Facebook comments and even videos have been made regarding City Council's decision to defer voting on this consent agenda item before the city attempted to talk with Midland ISD about who should pay for crossing guards. With the MISD school calendar showing the first day of school as August 13th, the discussion has less than a month to develop into a solution. MISD board member Sarah Crow Burleson from District 6 shared a comment via Facebook. Quote, "School starts in 23 business days. Child safety on our city streets is important. Not everyone has a parent drop them at the front school door," she said. Bethany Dolman Solis of Idea Public Schools wrote, quote, "The city is responsible for safe and operational roads. We've seen, tragically, that not all children have a safe way to cross the streets, thinking of our sweet student, AJ. The very least the city can do is ensure crossing guards are paid for and present across the city, especially this late in the year, with school close to starting and district budgets established," end quote. Emily Smith also shared her concern for the safety of children. Quote, "If anything, increasing guards should be discussed, not pulling the entire budget 23 days before school starts. I know most of these councilmen do not have younger children or grandchildren in public schools, but this is not an issue to treat like political football," she wrote. MISD told the Reporter-Telegram on Tuesday it was unaware that there may be an issue with the city's willingness to fund crossing guards. Quote, "With the deferral of voting on the contract for crossing guards at today's city council meeting, and upon learning of the possibility of the non-renewal of the City of Midland's long-standing agreement with the crossing guard vendor, the district contacted the city to gain insight into its intentions," MISD said in a statement. Community member Reagan Hinojos released a video with his comments regarding the council's decision. Quote, "I understand the need to talk about this issue, but to raise this topic 23 days before school starts lacks good judgment," he wrote via Facebook. "Now parents and crosswalk workers will be anxiously waiting to see if their jobs are secure and their children will be safe," end quote. Aubrey Ramirez Townsend said the city and the district should split the cost. Quote, "Both MISD and COM should pay for crossing guards. We need an abundance of them at all schools and busy city streets by schools," she wrote on the MRT's Facebook page. "This shouldn't be about who needs to fit the bill. It should be, let's get together and figure out a way to pay for crossing guards who safely cross our children. But the sad reality is that neither of them think that way when it comes to our children and community," end quote. 10-gallon tunes. West Texas Blowout brings country Tejano music for 10th year. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. The West Texas Blowout is celebrating 10 years of highlighting Texas country and Tejano music in Midland. The annual music festival will return to Midland on Friday and Saturday and will be held at the Midland County Horseshoe Amphitheater. Edwin Jaquez, the West Texas Blowout organizer, started the musical event to highlight local and visiting country and Tejano artists. Quote, "It's pretty amazing when you can bring in artists," Jaquez said. The West Texas Blowout hosts a Texas Country Day and a Tejano Day. Quote, in the Permian Basin and in Midland, Texas country is a big thing, Haquez said. It really brings in a diverse crowd, end quote. Haquez said that the event has attracted people from several states, including New Mexico, Arizona, Louisiana, and Colorado. The West Texas Blowout will also feature local food trucks and vendors. The Solis Brothers, a duo from Castroville, will open the Texas Country Day. Hudson Westbrook from Stephenville and singer of Two Way Drive will take the stage after the duo. Friday's headliners are the Dos Borrachos, Kevin Fowler, and Roger Krager. The Crazy Pimps, who was started by Eddie Jimenez in Eagle Pass, will open the night with their fusion of Tejano, Conjunto, and Cumbia music. Grupo La Calma and Ricky Naranjo and Los Gamblers will perform following the opening act. Grupo Culturas, a Tejano duo, will perform leading up to headliners La Mafia, who will close the night out with their pop, rock, and Tejano blend. Quote, we're very excited, Haquez said. It's looking very promising. Come on out to our event, end quote. Tickets for the West Texas Blowout can be purchased at Chito's Sports Bar and Mexican Restaurant, at Supermercado, and online. Lawn tickets cost $20, floor tickets cost $30, and VIP tables can be reserved by contacting Haquez at 432-260-6590. City debuts two new customer service tools. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. The City of Midland has officially launched a pair of tools as part of its larger customer service makeover so that residents will have an easier time interacting with the city. At the City Council meeting Tuesday, Chief of Staff Taylor Novak and Project Manager Kiara Taylor demonstrated C-Clicks Fix and Ask Jackie. C-Clicks Fix is a way for residents to report non-emergency issues they see around town, such as potholes, graffiti, and broken parks equipment. The city has had a service like this for a while, but Taylor said the old system was antiquated as well as cumbersome because it required creating a login. Now, users can submit their item details easily and get updates on its progress. Novak said a big benefit of C-Clicks Fix is that it lessens the reliance on reporting issues via phone calls and emails. C-Clicks Fix is part of the city's larger plan to make customer service much easier for residents. Novak told City Council that in May, more than 150 employees received intensive customer service training, and the city is trying to eliminate the time-consuming and annoying practice of phone transfers for resident questions. Quote, we hate the runaround, she said, acknowledging that people want their question answered by the first person who picks up. City staff were surveyed about the most frequently asked questions they received, and the answers have been put into a database accessible to all employees so that solutions can be delivered faster. With the implementation of Ask Jackie, the city hopes to reduce the need for phone calls even further. Ask Jackie is an AI virtual assistant embedded in the city's website. Jackie is a play on Pump Jack, the iconic nodding machines that help pull oil out of the ground. Taylor said, Ask Jackie is not ChatGPT. Quote, it doesn't scan the web to provide information, she said. Rather, it's trained internally and answers will change as information changes. The chatbot can provide immediate information on several topics, such as city services and events. See Clicks Fix, available on the city's website, as well as through an app on the App Store and Google Play. Ask Jackie is available on city webpages. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, July 11th. Patsy Charlene Thompson passed away on the 30th of June at the age of 87 in Midland, surrounded by her loving family. She was born to Lewis and Arlena Claxton in Lorain, Texas in 1936. Growing up, she had many friends and was very active in her younger years, eventually graduating from Lorain High School. After high school, she moved to Midkiff, Texas, where she raised her family. She would eventually make another move to Midland, where she had a long career managing property. She is survived by her son, Rocky Thompson, and Delfina Romero of Big Lake, Texas, and daughter Pamela Thompson of Midland, as well as many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She is also survived by one sister, LaVon Schawacker, and brother Weldon Claxton, and his wife Barbara, and numerous nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her father, Lewis Claxton, mother Arlena Claxton, sister Hortense Neff, and brother-in-law Robert Bob Schawacker. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, July 13th at 1 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. In lieu of flowers, friends may donate to Hospice of Midland and Bynum School in Midland, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Julian G. Garcia, age 29, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, July 7. Viewing will be Thursday, July 11, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel at 405 North Terrell Street in Midland. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, July 12, at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, July 11th. Mystery of Missing Undies Leaves Hostess Embarrassed. Dear Abby, we invited a couple for a short visit to our remote country cabin. Afterward, I discovered a pair of pink panties lying on the road in front of our mailbox. When I picked them up with a stick to carry to the trash, I realized they were a pair of clean pink panties I had misplaced. They must have stuck to the sheets I had placed on the bed immediately before our guests arrived. Now, I can't stop wondering what this couple must have been thinking when they tossed the panties. This may not seem like a serious issue, but it has become a source of embarrassment for me every time I meet these folks. Should I explain the panty situation or let it go? Signed, Red-Faced in South Carolina. Dear Red-Faced, don't get your panties in a twist. The next time you encounter the couple, ask if they have encountered a pair of pink panties that you misplaced around the time they came to visit. Dear Abby, I was watching a police video on the internet, and I spotted the woman who who lives in the apartment next door. I know it's her because of the prominent tattoo on her chest. She was being arrested for drunk and disorderly conduct. She went ballistic on the cops. First, she screamed and fought back. Next, she sagged and started sobbing at the top of her lungs. Then she started laughing maniacally. I'm afraid to live next to her now. Should I show the video to the apartment manager and ask that she be removed? Signed, Scared in Oklahoma. Dear Scared, although the police video was understandably upsetting, I am not sure that showing it to the building manager would be enough to have the woman evicted. It might, however, be a valid reason for you to move out of the building. If you are truly fearful, consult an attorney who specializes in real estate law who can advise you on possibly breaking your lease. Dear Abby, my wife and I are considering a move to another state to be close to our son and his family. Here's our dilemma. We have four lifelong friends who are respected and successful local real estate agents, each of whom would expect to be selected as the listing agent of her home. Choosing one would undoubtedly leave the other three hurt and offended. They all know each other. We feel our only option is to choose an outside agent to sell her home and to explain our rationale to our friends before the property hits the market. What say you, please? Signed, Hard Choice in the South. Dear Hard Choice, there is more than one way to handle this. The first would be to use the outside agent and possibly alienate all of your lifelong friends. Another would be to tell all of them you plan to move to another state to be closer to your children and see which one of the four offers you the best deal to represent you in the sale. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.